Thank you very much, operator. Good morning to everybody. I'm here in the room with Thomas Obendrauf, Robert van de Kerkhof, Heiko Arnold, and also our investor relations corporate communications team. It's a pleasure and thank you to have you all on this call. First quarter of 2017. You still remember a couple of weeks ago, we finalized the announcements on the year of 2016, which was the second best year, and I'm very pleased that the first quarter of 2017 started extremely solid. We could accomplish the best quarter in the history of the corporation. Group revenue up 14% to a quarterly all-time high of 586 million euro, primarily driven by very favorable conditions, higher selling prices, and as a consequence, also an improved product mix. We saw a strong flow-through through the EBITDA, improvement by 46.6% to a new quarterly all-time high of over 135 million euro. And the consequence of that is that for the first time in history, we actually don't have any net debt, but show a net liquidity of 66.5 million euro by 31st of March 2017. We will talk quite a bit further on our disciplined implementation of our Score10 strategy, which was a very important part, again, that helped us to lift our quarterly results and to implement many of the very exciting projects. It's a great pleasure for me to have Heiko on board of the team, and he started as the Chief Technology Officer for the Lenzing Group as of May 1st. It's great to have him on board, but maybe it's good if he introduces himself rather than me doing that. So maybe Heiko, please.
Yeah, thank you, Stefan. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. As Stefan already mentioned, I'm on board since 1st of May, and the implementation of the Score10 strategy relies on a very thorough execution of a capital investment plan, where Lenzing has projects in the pipeline equivalent to a lower triple-digit million euro range that has to be invested annually. This requires that we get our organization ready to deliver these projects, to clear the critical interfaces, to deliver the projects timely and within the KPIs defined by the business plan. But in parallel, we also will have to look into the operations, which we have already up and running, and to ensure that continuous improvement is on our daily agenda, because only in doing so we will stay ahead and keep our costs under control. And I think my prior jobs for a large chemical company have given me the experience and expertise to also contribute with that knowledge here to Lenzing, and I'm looking forward in doing so. And it has been an exciting first 2 weeks with the company.
Great, thanks, Heiko. To have somebody who has been so many years in Asia and working for BASF for so many years, I'm really thrilled to have Heiko on board, and it's nice to see how he blends in already after a couple of days. And I think we should expect a lot of him without not making the pressure for him too high. Now, the next slide, I think, just reiterates some of the things that Heiko just mentioned. We have quite a pipeline of, you know, important specialty fiber investment projects going on, the debottleneckings at our site in Austria, in Heiligenkreuz, of course, the already announced brownfield expansion in Mobile, Alabama. All of those projects are fully on time and on schedule. But we are also, as mentioned a couple of weeks before, in the final phase of deciding where we wanna actually build then the first lyocell greenfield expansion in Asia, and that's a decision that we wanna take in the next couple of months. Looking at our strategy progress, next to the specialty fiber investment program, we are fully on track with the plan to announce and decide how we wanna accomplish the backward integration target of 75% by the year 2020. Again, for recollection, we have three options: to do something with a current supplier in a strategic setup, brownfield conversion or a greenfield expansion. All of that is possible. We have very attractive options that we're looking at, and as said, we will decide about those options by the end of 2017. What fills me with great pleasure is actually our continuous improvement journey, both on the operational but particularly also on the commercial side, not only in the way we create value but also in the way we extract value. I think that is something which is a big underlying support for the good results that we have shown over the last quarters and again in this quarter. On the customer intimacy front, we reiterated already our strategy to step increasingly away from intermediaries, from agents and the like, and do things ourselves, be in contact with the customer in full. As a consequence, we opened two new offices in Turkey and Korea, where in the past we had very powerful intermediaries. Now we go direct, and we actually see customers very thrilled by this step, and particularly in Turkey, in a very difficult climate, to have an office opening was seen with a great enthusiasm by customers, and they feel that we really support Turkey, and I think that is something that we consider as a very positive, emotional, and long-term differentiating investment that we have done. Something that we don't talk about that often, but which increasingly becomes a major source of differentiation for the Lansing Group, is our branding, is our brand interfaces in the market. For recollection, we have more than 360 million brand contacts on retails, both on textiles as well as non-woven, more than 400 cooperation partnerships. And increasingly, we put a lot of emphasis on digital marketing, blog campaigns and the like, with a lot of touch points. The specialization program already touched upon, the expansion programs fully on time, and we continue to be very pleased and in part overwhelmed by the reaction of the market on Refibra. It's a conservative industry in terms of bringing it into the market, but if you look into how many brands and people want to cooperate with us on that, the uptake in the market, the door opening, despite the fact that Refibra will not be a game changer now in terms of financial results in 17 and 18, but the door opening and the positive spillover effect is really super. In terms of new products, I gave you a teaser already last time saying that in Q2 we come with a new launch. Now we're going to get a bit more precise this time. We actually will have the launch on May 24th. It is something that will help us further to de-emphasize the commodity character of the business on the viscose side. More of that in a bit more than a week from now to come during the Planet Textile show that will be held in India. Good. With this introduction, let me hand it over to Robert, who will take us a little bit through the most recent market developments.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Stefan. Also, warm welcome to Heiko on the team. Definitely needed if you look at the opportunities that we have in the market. As Stefan mentioned, overall, we stay really strong on track with our specialty strategy with very strong demand for our tensile and modal fibers. We're also, as Stefan already mentioned, working very hard on specializing up our viscose strategy, all in line with the overall specialization strategy of our Score 10 corporate strategy. When you look at the environment we are working in, you can see that the first quarter has been overall different than any of the other first quarters in previous years. The viscose prices remained high. Now, we mentioned this already. We saw this trend changing already end of the fourth quarter last year. There was a tremendous pressure in China due to environmental reasons. Certain assets had to be shut down because of smog in northern China. That trend continued in the first quarter, so this normally typical dip that we see before the Chinese New Year did not happen. In fact, the prices stayed at a fairly high level in the first quarter forward. When you look at cotton, it has been very stable in the first quarter, and if you look at the polyester prices, again there you see an increase in the first quarter, also driven by the shutdown of certain assets in northern China. So this was a short-term peak, but as you can see, this trend is normalizing now. We also launched, for information, our sustainability report during the World Earth Day in April. This report was highly perceived. But you can see on these price trends, sustainability is an increasing important driver for the textiles industry. So the sustainability report has been launched. You can look at it online. Very, very positive feedback from the market throughout the value chain, from business partners, from brands and retailers. So we are on track there. If we go into a little bit more details on the cotton side, you can see that the price of cotton remains stable. Specifically, China is very stable, where the prices continue to be higher than the rest of the world. What is good about the cotton is the consistency of the Chinese government on its cotton policy. They are committed to continue to reduce the inventories that they have. You can see this very clearly on the right bottom slide. And you also have this inventory reduction combined with a very stable pricing strategy. So we believe cotton is on track. We do see an increase in acreage with a 23.1 million ton estimated production, could be slightly higher. If you look at the additional capacities that are being added in specifically North America, but also demand is very strong. So overall, cotton on track, very stable, and with the correction in inventory, the industry is heading to a more normal situation from a supply-demand perspective. If you look at viscose, very strong price level as mentioned before. We started over the 17,000 RMB. We've now seen a decline in March, going to about the mid-15,000 RMB. And this is very much in line with the expectations. We had this abnormal shortage of supply. We have an ongoing strong demand in line with our strategy for the wood-based cellulosic fiber, specifically viscose. So strong demand, little supply, resulted in the high prices. We see now that the inventories of the viscose producers, but also of the downstream players, is to a more normalized level. And as a consequence, you see more a balanced supply-demand situation for viscose, so with a lower price level. Dissolving wood pulp went up to a level of 950, about 3% since the beginning of Q1. So overall, still a good story for the viscose prices year to date. We do anticipate, as you can see, an increase in capacity in 2017 versus 2010. The red line will go up. This is expected to come online, this new capacity come online mainly in China during Q3 and Q4. This is also what we really expect. As I mentioned earlier, the market is strong, demand is strong, so this additional capacity is really needed from an interfiber competition. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Thomas.
Thank you very much, Robert. Hello and welcome also from my side. So let me guide you through the most important financial numbers of our Q1 2017. Overall, as already pointed out by Stefan, performance in Q1 was really, really strong. We had an excellent start into 2017. So let me start with revenues. Actually, revenues came in with 586 million euros. That's an increase of more than 14% compared to the Q1 in 2016. Mostly driven, of course, was this increase by significantly higher prices, a better product mix, but also to a certain extent by favorable FX conditions and a significant change in our inventories. The share of our specialty fibers came in with 41.5%. This compares to 42% in the year before. Of course, this number is highly impacted by the very strong viscose prices in Q1. Moving on to EBIT and EBITDA. EBITDA jumped by almost 50% from 92 million to 135 million. Again, of course, driven by the very strong prices in Q1. EBITDA margin jumped from 18% to 23%, so it's an improvement of 5 percentage points. We see, of course, the same pattern for the EBIT numbers and the EBIT margin. EBIT increased by 72%, coming from less than 60 million and going to 102 million. EBIT margin increased from 11.6% to 17.5%. Moving on to our net profit. Actually, net profit came in with 75 million. That's an increase of almost 70% compared to 44 million in the year before. Earnings per share increased from 1.64 euro to 2.75 euros. The AGM actually on April 25th approved our proposal with regards to the dividend, and the dividend finally was paid out on the 2nd of May, which was 4.20 euro, in total 111 million. Moving on to some key figures from the balance sheet, I'm very pleased actually to present to you the net liquidity position of Lansing. It's the first time in history that Lansing has a net liquidity position. If you just go back a couple of years, you can see that net debt was around 500 million, but over the last 3 to 4 years, actually, we could bring it to a positive number. So very, very positive development there. With regards to the equity ratio came in with 54% as per end of Q1. Of course, this does not yet reflect the dividend payment that was made then at the beginning of May. Moving on to cash flow and trading working capital, of course, cash flow was very strong. Gross cash flow, of course, was fully in line with the good operating performance in Q1. If you take a look at the operating cash flow, actually, of course, operating cash flow was impacted by the reduction of our factoring volume we did in Q1. And the free cash flow, of course, was impacted by the increase in our CapEx number. Taking a look at trading working capital, still on a very favorable level of around 17%. So to summarize, I think we had a very, very good start, and we are very well positioned for the quarters to come. And with that, I hand back to Stefan for the outlook.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Thank you very much, Robert. So what we hear at the market, very positive environment, strong demand, very much in line with what we have seen over the last quarters, and we see no slowing down on the demand side. Some minor capacity additions that we will see this year will not really have a major impact, and capacity coming for sure then in 2018 and 19. But we shouldn't forget this is a more than 6 million ton industry with growth rates north of 6%. So there is quite some volume uptake that we will see just by the growth of the industry. Strong balance sheet, very strong start into the year. And if you then look into what are our priorities for the year, it is clearly number one in terms of strengthening the core to make a decision how we're going to execute our plans and the backward integration for dissolved wood pulp. The already mentioned continuous improvement journey, it is of essence for us that both on the commercial side but operationally, we have all the discipline and all the mentality in there to just run like a Swiss clock, in this case an Austrian clock, but with Swiss quality. That in terms of customer intimacy, that we continue to build our brand architecture to a high degree of professionalism and help both end consumers and our partners in the value chain to fully extract the intrinsic value of our specialty fibers and use this well in the positioning. It is important for us that end consumers associate the values with the tensils of this, with the tensil brands and similars. And in this context, of course, the strengthening of our direct sales and marketing channel is essential because we need to explain to everybody in the chain those trades, that they themselves then can use those benefits for the benefit of their business. In terms of specialization, I already mentioned, of course, the expansion in Asia for Lyocell, for our Tencel, and some of the unique product launches. One of them will be on the 24th of May. If we amalgam this now all together, what do we see? We see a macroeconomic environment that, despite now the Dutch elections, French elections, still carry quite some uncertainty, whether it's Brexit, whether it is Turkey, whether it's just, you know, some isolationistic trends and questions on global trade flows between US and Asia. There is political uncertainty. In this context, however, the global fiber market is doing relatively well. Fiber demand overall continues to grow well north of the 3% level, and in there, the wood-based cellulosic fibers continue to grow well north of 6%. So wood-based cellulosic fibers should have should continue to have a more positive environment than what we see for the overall fiber market. We are very well positioned in this context. Our specialty strategy is absolutely the right strategy. We have strong entry barriers for our business. We have strong brands, good technology, and we continue to build out on that. Now, if you then look into excellent start into the year, good market environment, we reiterate our guidance for the year. So under the assumption of unchanged conditions in the fiber market, exchange rate pretty much where they are, then we should have a considerable improvement in results in the fiscal year 2017 compared to 2016. With that, I would like to finish our elucidation and open up the floor for any questions. Operator, please.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star followed by one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star followed by two. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. Anyone who has a question may press star followed by one at this time. And please limit yourself to two questions only so that everyone has a chance to ask a question. Should there be time left, we can start a second Q&A session. And one moment for the first question, please. First question comes from the line of Matthias Pfeifenberger of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gents. Stephanie, congrats to the record results. Very impressive. A couple of questions from my side. Firstly, on prices, when do you think this rollover will find an end? Like, when will prices stabilize again? And especially in light of polyester, has showed quite some weakness, but then Brent prices are, crude prices are already picking up again with the OPEC news. And then secondly, on the capacity, what do you make of Sattari's now 2 to 3 million plans? Is that, first of all, technically feasible, and what would you expect the time frame to be? I guess rather long term. And then just a small one, the pulp integration. Now, it seems like the pulp project is or can be independent from the Asian Tencel project. So it can be in a different country, obviously. In that regard, my interest would be how you would factor or manage FX in the equation. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pfeifenberger. Let me take the competitive and the pulp integration question, and then I will hand over to Robert, who will speak a bit about the polyester pricing. The announcement of Sattari in terms of 2 to 3 million ton, number one, I would treat them in the context of just overall there was a positive market, and I think many people are interested to grow their position. I will not start to comment in detail on any competitor moves,
yep.
But it is not something that we should expect any capacity addition of that magnitude anywhere in the short term. We look at it, number one, with a certain interest, some degree of curiousness, how indeed, as you say, both the execution but also the timing would look like. But I think it just also reiterates why our strategy makes so much sense. We are focusing not on viscose expansion, we focus on the expansions on the specialty side. That we will see capacity in 2018 and 19 coming is for me without a question. That we will have capacity that will be in excess of demand growth is also out of the question. How much of that will come, I think that is something that we will need to see. Overall, if I look at the performance of our specialty fibers in the context of even the most recent price developments of viscose, it fills me with a lot of confidence. In terms of pulp integration, you're absolutely right. It doesn't need to be in the same place as a lyocell fiber site. It's of benefit, but most important, I think, for any of the pulp option, whether it is something to do with one of the existing suppliers, brownfield or greenfield conversion, is that the overall economics in context of an investment, if there would be one, I think just makes sense. Integration is a benefit, but it's not a conditio sine qua non. Robert, maybe on the polyester prices.
on the polyester prices, the main driver of polyester prices is just this chronic overcapacity that they have. And then you have the short-term supply and demand, as we've seen in the last few months. So oil will have definitely an impact on it. There might be a small increase, but I'm not expect a significant deviation of the prices versus cotton or viscose. So from that perspective, it will add some pressure to the overall industry, but it will not be a major change. When you look then at the viscose prices and in relation to that, the viscose prices are supply demand driven, as I mentioned earlier. But when you look at the lenzing prices, we've significantly made progress on the differentiation of the modal and tensile prices from the standard viscose prices. That is the whole core of our specialty strategy, where we're also trying to specialize up the remaining viscose capacity. We are making good progress on that. So I'm very confident that in the future we will see this trend continuing and that we will be less dependent on the commodity viscose price trend with our portfolio of specialty fibers.
Okay, but the rollover in viscose you expect to end soon, the declines you mentioned, right? It's nothing structural, it's basically from this. So a couple
Correct.
Of players bringing machines back, and then you probably see an end to this downward momentum at some point in the second quarter.
Correct.
Okay,
you see that now already. Right?
Yeah,
all the capacity that was shut down because of environmental reason is back on.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks a lot.
Next question comes from line of Stefan Trubrich of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Stephanie. Thanks for taking my questions. First, I would also be interested on the pricing environment. I mean, maybe you could explain in more detail what's the reason behind the fact that cotton prices are rising. I mean, only the last couple of days, cotton futures almost exploded, and viscose prices still keep falling. And if I'm correct, I think cotton now trades even above viscose prices. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit on that. And also, I mean, if we have seen the decline in viscose prices in recent weeks coming from a peak of 17,300 renminbi to now mid 15,000. I mean, has a similar price trend been affecting your specialty fibers, or have they been stable, or did they increase even further? So this would be my first question. And the second question, if I remember correctly, you mentioned in the full year conference call that due to the higher viscose price, downstream some players in the value chain have some issues to pass on higher prices. So if you in general could comment on this situation and how this can be passed on and cost inflation in general. Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan. So three questions on first cotton. Cotton is increasing simply because at this moment, if you look at the available harvest, there is at this moment limited good cotton available. The Chinese are trying to reduce inventory at this moment, but that inventory is not such a good quality. So a lot of the traders and customers, cotton customers, are at this moment interested in buying that good cotton, and that's reflected in the cotton future. So therefore, strong demand for the good cotton future goes up, and once there is not much more available anymore, then the Chinese will be forced to buy the inventory from China. So this is a temporary supply-demand situation of the good cotton. But overall, if you look at the longer-term trend, as I mentioned earlier, we do expect cotton prices to remain strong and fairly flat. When you look at the viscose prices, the fall, that is purely supply and demand. We've seen the shortage in supply because of environmental reasons. All the capacity that was taken out because of environmental reasons is back. We've got a more normalized situation. Inventories are back to a healthy level after the Chinese New Year. So again, fully in line with also previous years, you see now a price level that is lower, and we also expect this to be, you know, we don't expect this to go up again to the 17,000. That was really exceptional, but we expect the prices to be you know, in this range, maybe even a bit lower as you get into then the summer season. So, but this is a little bit the outlook. We don't expect major changes there, but the drop is explained by the exceptional situation supply demand. The downstream value chain pressure is definitely a concern. That is something that we've been reporting in the past, and it's not something that will go away fairly easy. We are working really on two fronts. Number one is giving our customers the time to pass on the price increases specifically for our specialty products. Now, specialty products are in fact continuing to increase in prices because there is a very strong value story for them, and we are helping our brands and retailers with this value story. And this is also why the brand strategy is becoming so important, that our partners downstream understand the value that our fibers offer.
Okay, so you confirm just that speciality prices continue to go up, and with the ReFiber launch being more successful than you expected initially, could you tell us maybe how many more customers are currently looking at ReFiber?
Well, yeah, the volume impact is different than the amount of customers looking into it. So we have a different market strategy here. We're really talking about approaching the brands and the retailers. So at this moment, we have over a dozen brands and retailers looking at it. We're not necessarily pushing for more at this moment because it requires a lot of our resources. Some of the fabric developments take a lot of time. Last week, there was a tech textile trade show in Frankfurt. I've seen completely new fabrics that need to be developed from a fabric construction perspective, also to dyeing and finishing that were offered and that are now available. So these are the development cycles that take a lot of time. We do expect more brands and retailers to launch a FIBA offering later this year, but also still in 2018, as the development of these kind of new offers can really take 18 months.
Mm-hmm. And just to coming to the input cost inflation again, I mean, you said that the dissolving wood pulp price is at $950 end of March, but this price has now obviously in line with the lower viscose price also declined. So could you, what would be the current market price in DWP? And do you expect over the coming quarters and years more capacity to come into the market? Also, I mean, in line with, I mean, Sartori's announcement, they also probably need to find some way to supply their viscose production. Have there been any major announcements in the industry for that?
Now, maybe in two questions, I will take this, Mr. Trubrich, and then I think maybe we give the chance to somebody else in terms of answer Q&As. DWP is around the 870 mark at the moment, so it declined pretty much in parallel, even as a percentage, and pretty much in parallel with viscose. In terms of new capacity announcements, no, there were no new capacity announcements on the DWP side, and indeed that is one of the reasons why we look with at least a certain degree of skepticism at some of the announcements that are out there, because if you just would just add this all up and say, yeah, and then the pulp needs to come from somewhere, that is not something that will happen overnight. Now, again, each of our competitors has his own pulp sourcing or production strategy. Again, I will not comment on individual competitors. But in principle, the observation is correct that the dissolved wood pulp prices have declined almost in parallel to viscose.
Okay, thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Laura Lopez Pineda of Baader Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning and congratulations for the outstanding results. So first, one question regarding caustic soda. So there has been some force majeure announcements in Europe, which together with plant turnarounds and some plant closures due to the technology shift might significantly tighten the market. Have you felt any impact of this situation in the second quarter, or do you expect to feel any impact throughout the year. And maybe one more. So early on the year, there were some news that suggested the possibility of a significant increase in tariff duties on viscose and model in the U.S. So as you only produce tensile in the U.S. and you import your viscose from Europe or your Chinese plants, is there going to be a significant impact for Lenzing if this happens? Or maybe can you just give us some information about this and was this matter already resolved? Do you already have some information or this could still be a risk? And will the impact be significantly for you? And just one more, do you expect to start the construction of your tensile plant in Asia before or after your plant in the U.S. is completed? And regarding the size of the plant, will it be comparable to the 90 KT? And can you give us an estimate on the CapEx, as this one will be a greenfield project? Thanks.
Okay. Mrs. Pineda, I will start with tariff and Asia, and then I will hand over to Thomas on the caustic question. Indeed, there was a initiative by the U.S. as a retaliation for beef disputes that, you know, put all kind of different industry into a basket for potential tariffs. Included that is also viscose. By the way, I think this is now the third time that something like that happened. In previous time, it was again taken off the list, you know, given that it doesn't bear any relevance in the discussion on beef. The industry, both the viscose producing industry as well as customers with some of the biggest also non-woven brand names or consumer brand names are discussing that. There are some complications in that context because the responsible authorities have not yet all been announced due to some of the difficulties in the new president's administration announcing some of those bodies. So that might still take some time until it clears out. If it would come to practice, I think the impact of for the group would be rather low. In terms of Asia, yes, we would start very likely construction before our U.S. plant would be completed. The timeline that we said, it would make sense for the Lenzing Group to have every year and a half to 2 years to start up a new tensile site or new lyocell plant, and we plan to start up a mobile plant by end of the first quarter of 2019. So somewhere end of 2020 would be a reasonable assumption, give or take a quarter. So yes, the construction would be in part in parallel. Thomas, maybe on the caustic side.
On the caustic soda, actually, we do see some price increases. However, as you mentioned in your question, you were referring actually to Europe. We do not see an impact in Europe, even though, of course, there were some shutdowns, some plant shutdowns, and we also hear about maybe one or the other issue when starting production again after the shutdown. However, the supply situation is not impacted here in Europe. But what we see is that prices of caustic soda are definitely on a higher level in Asia, so impacting especially our Indonesian and our Chinese side. And we would expect the prices to remain on a higher level, at least in Asia, for the rest of the year.
And sorry, just a backup question. And were these prices already in the first quarter, or have just started to go up in China?
We saw already the majority of the increase in Q1. However, what you have to keep in mind, I mean, this is, if you just take a look at where our competition is located, I mean, they are all located in Asia, so they are definitely feeling at least the same impact or even a bigger impact because all of their asset footprint is basically located in Asia.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from line of Bernd Maurer of RCB. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Two questions remaining from my side. First, it's with regard to your P&L, looking at the revenue breakdown, your other sales, you reported quite quite strong other sales of 76 million in Q1, comparing to 64 million in Q4 and only 49 million in Q1 16. You mentioned some positive FX hedging effects in your quarterly report. I assume that these were booked in this line. So first, how much approximately or how big was the positive hedging effect? And second, is this line inflated by the one or the other additional, let's say, or any extraordinary effect, as the other revenues of 76 million was at about 10 to 20 million higher than in the previous quarters? That's point one. And point two is, you mentioned some capacity or some maintenance shutdowns in Q1 this year. You are not reporting any longer any capacity numbers, but can you state how much was the output lower in Q1 17 versus Q1 16 or fourth quarter of last year? Thank you.
Okay, let me start with the capacity shutdowns, and I will then ask Thomas to comment on the P&L and revenue. We indeed had a couple of planned shutdowns in our fiber operations. For example, in China, we also had some in Europe. We don't anymore publish exact output figures nor capacity figures. I think it is fair to assume that from an output point of view, Q1 was a weaker quarter than what we would expect in the quarters going forward. And I think I would leave it with that. This is all planned. I think the startups went very well. And we see actually also out of the continuous improvement program that we are doing quite some positive effects on our ability to squeeze product out of our assets. Thomas?
On the revenue side, I mean, as I pointed out during the presentation, I mean, the increase in revenues mainly came from significantly better prices and a better product mix. In your question, you were referring to FX effects in Q1. Actually, as in the past, actually we keep the same hedging policy, and actually the hedging rates were relatively close actually to the actual rates. There was a minor impact, just a couple of millions, that is of course included in the revenue line. Besides that, actually, what increased a little bit was actually the volume of our third-party pipe sales. That was also a couple of millions, and that is included, of course, in revenues, of course.
Okay, thank you. Is the increase of the third-party bulb sales something extraordinary in Q1, or is this something going on?
That's nothing extraordinary.
Yeah.
This is something which you will also see in the quarters to come.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Next question comes from the line of Sebastian Bray of Berenberg. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Congratulations on the results, and thank you for taking my questions. They'd really fall into two categories for me. One is on cash flow. The other is on general supply demand in viscose. Firstly, on cash flow, could you provide some sort of guidance? I was a bit surprised that the CapEx only came in at about the 25 million mark for the first quarter. Would you expect this to ramp through the whole year, and what level do you think would be appropriate for 2017? Similarly, I think your working cash flow level was level of trading working capital was quite low. Would you expect it to remain at this level for the remainder of the year? A slightly separate question, it's been continuous improvement has been mentioned quite a bit during the call. I don't mean to be trite, but your EBITDA margins are pretty close to all-time highs. What is there left to improve? On the Cellulosic market growth, I think it was mentioned earlier in the call that the growth is now, I would quote, north of 6%, and from memory at your capital markets day, you guided for 5 to 6%. So has there been some underlying improvement in this area? Apologies if I've misunderstood. And finally, could you give some idea of the magnitude of the capacity expansions coming in 2018 and 2019 in viscose? Thank you.
Okay. Let me start with continuous improvement and to comment on capacity expansion and the market growth figure, and then I will hand over to Thomas on cash flow and working capital and CapEx guidance. In terms of continuous improvement, you're right, EBITDA percentage has been an all-time high. Let's face it, you know, this is an amalgam of different things. Number one is we are benefiting from a favorable market. We are benefiting from a somewhat favorable exchange rate, and we are benefiting from the implementation of our strategy. I continue to stress this. We're in a transformation of this group, and we are now a good year and a half into the transformation journey. If I look at the potential of continuous improvement, both on commercial side as well as then on the operational side, absolutely no, we are not at the end of the pole. There, you know, remains quite some opportunity and improvement that we just need to bulldoze through the group. That is something that I think, you know, will continue to strengthen the agility, performance of the group, and it's just an important part of the Lenzing culture. In terms of market, indeed, we see that the overall trend for cellulosics is actually improving rather than going down. One of the things that we do see is due to limited supply that what we have seen over the last quarters, that actually the market couldn't be supplied in full. So indeed, we expect that with a somewhat you know, more relaxed supply side, that actually demand will also go north of the 5 to 6% bracket as we guided during Capital Market Day. In terms of capacity expansion, I think there it is indeed difficult for us to come with one figure because we see capacity announcements north of 800,000 that have been mentioned. At the same time, we lack the visibility on a per player basis when exactly they would start up. And as already Robert mentioned, one of the things that is difficult to guide on is what would be the behavior of the environmental protection bureaus in the different provinces in China and how they actually would continue to make pressure on some of the less well-performing sites from an environmental perspective. Thomas, maybe on the cash flow side.
On the cash flow side, let me start with the CapEx number. Actually, when we did our call for the fiscal year 2016, we mentioned a number of 200 million, which we expect for 2017. Now, looking at Q1, actually in Q1, we had around 27 million. That's an increase, of course, compared to last year. However, of course, the run rate is not fully reflecting the 200 million. So you can expect that the run rate with regards to the CapEx number will definitely increase over the quarters to come. And for the year 2017, I would still expect a number towards 200 million. With regards to the working capital, actually, what you have to keep in mind is that looking at the liquidity position of Lenzing, what we did in Q1 is that we discontinued the factoring of our US dollar receivables, and the impact is around 30 million.
Okay, that is helpful. Thank you. Just a quick question with regards to the capacity. The figure of 800,000 tons that was mentioned, is this for 2018 or for 2018/2019?
This is a capacity addition for 18/19. However, in all transparency, we have not yet started to factor in some of the most recent announcements by Setri on how we should factor that in, because our assumption at the moment is not a lot of that will be in the 18 to 19 timeframe.
Thank you.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by one at this time.
Okay, as there are... Oh, no, there is one more question.
We have a follow-up question from Mr. Stefan Tubrich of Kepler Cheuvreux. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, sorry about the late follow-up question. Just coming back to this cost inflation being passed on in the value chain. I mean, with the spinners being affected, and these are confronted by wage inflation also. I mean, are they in a better position to pass these higher costs on to the clothing retailers, or is this still an issue because their profitability was always very thin? And another question, coming back to this product launch in a couple of days in India, I mean, is this an event taking place every year? Will this be a product for the Indian market, or is it just a coincidence that this fair happens in India? So some details would be appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, I think this is all for Robert.
Yeah, thank you, Stefan. So the cost inflation is an issue in the value chain. I mentioned it before. We have we are managing this very careful with the preferred partners in the value chain, where we are making sure that our pricing policy is consistently implemented, that we stay in line with the price, but also that they have time to pass on these price increases. So when we look at what we are doing, it's really with our close partners, the prioritized customers. We are managing very well, but we have really a win-win situation. They pass it on and we increase prices. This is also one of the reasons why, for instance, the specialty products that are much more on the longer term price track are not seeing that same peak in the first quarter that we've seen on the viscose side, but you know, we have a much more steady and consistent price increase. So there is going to be ongoing pressure on some of the other players. The brand and retailers apparently do not yet accept these price increases, most of it being absorbed at this moment by the garment producers. So that's what we see in the value chain. But our customers are able to pass it on. Now, the real exciting last question is on the product launch. It is indeed, Planet Textile is a regular activity. It does change country each time. The fact that it's now by coincidence in India is good. We will be making this announcement next week as a global product launch. It is all around sustainability. So this is really one of the key strengths that Lenzing is being recognized for. And of course, we're very happy that we have the opportunity now to launch this in India, but it's not limited to the Indian market. It's a global differentiator for viscose.
Okay, good. Looking forward to that. Thank you very much.
Okay.
There are no further questions on the phone line.
Thank you very much, operator. With that, I would like to finish the call, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us for the first quarter result announcement of 2017. Strong start into the year. I think we look with confidence at the year to come, and we're looking forward to interact with you again after the second quarter. Thank you very much, operator. We can close the call.